everybody. This is Maggie from The Positude Show. Tonight's show will be a Positude podcast, and I will have two guests on. This will be a two-part series. My first guest will be Judy Tate, who is a nurse whose testimony will help to corroborate the claims of my main guest, whose name is Lori. Lori claims to be the victim of satanic ritual abuse and also MKUltra, and is making the claim that she is the only known survivor of an attempted snuff film, in addition to her mom having sold her into these very dark situations as a child. I would like to make the statement that the views of my guests are not necessarily those of my own, those of L&M Radio Network, or the views of the affiliate. These are two women who have chosen to come forth and ask to have a forum in which to share their stories and what they've experienced over the course of several years. And when I do this type of show, when someone calls me or approaches me and asks to do an interview, I always try to do some research and some vetting to substantiate the story that they want to share with everybody. And in this case, Lori was very forthright and said to me, there's a nurse that's known me for years that can corroborate some of these things that I'm telling you about. And so I contacted Judy, and she's agreed to come on and share some of her knowledge as to Lori's story. So, Judy, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening.
Okay. So I'm going to let her just go ahead and give her credentials.
Hi, my name is Judy Tate, and I am a registered nurse of 40 years. I have been friends with the person that Maggie is featuring on her program, Lori, for 32 years. And as far as my credentials, I have worked in all ICU arenas, especially the emergency room department. But my specialty is in chemical dependency and the detox thereof at a hospital called Daniel Freeman Marina in Marina Del Rey, California. And also, I also worked at the Locke Behavioral Health Unit, which a lot of people know in layman's terms as the psych unit. And I was also a PET team director. I placed people on holds in the emergency room. And I also am a legal nurse consultant and have given testimony in my area of expertise, which is chemical dependency and psych. So enough about me. Let's talk about Lori. Lori and I became friends 32 years ago, and we became friends and immediately. And I've watched her whole life unfold before me, and I have met her family, and she has referred to a lot of the serious child abuse and neglect brought on by her mother and her stepfather. Lori, it took her a long time to actually unweave and untangle the absolute torture that she went through as a child and as a teenager, which is not uncommon at all. And once I helped her do that, we have discovered that she is a ritual abuse survivor and satanic in nature, of which her mother was a part of that, and her pediatrician was also a part of that. So she had no safe haven to go to. When she complained to her mother, she was placed in foster homes, but she believes that she was sold into slavery, and I have come to the same conclusion and can collaborate that. Throughout the years of knowing Lori and a gentleman that she was married to, Bill, she was in a hotel room and figured out that they were being filmed in the hotel room, which is sexually explicit. And she believed that the intention of that film was to make it a snuff film. And she started taking pictures of the mirror. She showed me these pictures, and I could see two people standing behind it and basically a camera apparatus. And it was quite shocking. And that's what shut the whole thing down. In the meantime, as a result of that, they have been stalking her. And at one point, she was placed in Twin Towers Jail, which is a jail in Los Angeles that has a unit for people with psychiatric diagnoses. And Lori has been given all kinds of psychiatric diagnoses, of which are not founded. She is simply a product of the environment she was brought up in and has survived it. And she's come out on the other side. And I'm very pleased to announce that. Now I want to talk about a device that was plugged into Lori's skin. And the only way it could have been placed there would have been when she was a prisoner in Twin Towers. Because the unit she was on, they have access to all kinds of drugs, including drugs that can make you pass out completely and not know what's happening. that's probably how that got into her body. Although I didn't witness it, it's the only thing that makes sense. I did witness the removal of this item from her body, and it was metallic and small, about, I would say, a half an inch by an eighth of an inch. It was a cylinder. It had grooves around it. It looked like a transmitter, for lack of a better word. So I don't know if it's a GPS thing to track her, but, you know, Lori has complained to me of hearing voices, and that is not part of her history. Voices telling her to be agitated, things of that nature. And it would be something that would drive a normal person a little bit nuts. And Lori has gotten through all that, and she's on the other side now, and she just wants to tell her story and let other people know that she was subject to, as a child, MK Ultra, and she feels she was groomed to be a part of this whole conspiracy. And you can look it up. It's all over the YouTube, and watch documentaries about people that have come clean on this. And a lot of these girls that are talking about the MK Ultra, they split off into multiple personality. And I have a lot of experience in this arena, and Lori has not split off, thank God. And she can tell her story. So that's why I'm here, is to collaborate. All the things she's going to tell you on your show actually happened to her. And I was witness to a lot of it. And I also talked to her family and found them to be dishonest, misleading, and liars. Is there anything you'd like me to collaborate more on?
So as her nurse, in at least the situation where you discovered she was at the same psychological facility that you were working at, you would have been privy to her personal medical records. And I know that she's given you permission to share the knowledge that you have found as a result of both your friendship with her and also the charts that you were able to view and to witness while she was in house. Would you say that the diagnoses then that were administered to her, the diagnoses that she was given, were not correct in nature?
That would be correct. A lot of people are just admitted with psychotic, not otherwise specified. And then the psychiatrist will further delve into it. When I found Lori in my unit, she was severely depressed. And based on what she had been through and had come out of, you know, she was basically almost catatonic. She could barely speak. And I comforted her and talked to her and found her to not be delusional, to not be paranoid, and to be seriously depressed. And she was hospitalized. And also, on another occasion, she appeared in my emergency room, and I was running the PET team, that stands for Psychiatric Emergency Evaluation Team. And I interviewed Lori, and we didn't admit her, but she came in because she was afraid and was having severe anxiety and probably PTSD because of all of this torture that happened to her with the MK Ultra and, you know, just all these drugs in her system. They've poisoned her in jail. They've abused her. They've handcuffed her. I've seen she has marks on her arms that will not go away. They're permanent. She's permanently scarred from being roughly handcuffed so many times. And every time they want to go after her, they just simply agitate her and come after her, and she goes to jail. And once more, against her will, is exposed to all kinds of heavy-duty psychiatric medication that, if you have a normal mind and they put you on that stuff, it doesn't play well. It doesn't go well, you know. And you don't have a right to refuse in jail. In a hospital setting, you can refuse. So, yeah, I was privileged to her chart, and I even discussed her case with the psychiatrist. And that's when we were discovering all of this. Not only was she put in foster homes, but she was being abused and groomed and sold into this underground satanic sex trade slave situation. So they tried to make a snuff movie with her and her husband. Those were the pictures I mentioned before. And when they realized she was filming, and they were under, you know, they shut that down, but they didn't stop pursuing her. They've been pursuing her up to now. This has not stopped. So it's very brave of her to come forward and talk about this. And as a psych nurse, and a nurse who is a legal nurse consultant that can testify in court, everything I'm telling you, I would testify into a court of law. That's how strongly I believe in what has happened to this poor friend of mine, and also basically has confided in me so that I can help her do reality checks and keep her out of that anxiety that she gets into and the fear mode when they go after her. Is there anything else I can help with elaborating on?
Yes, if Lori had mentioned to me briefly that there were bumps on her back that were seemingly coming to the surface that weren't there before, and mm-hmm. she feels that there are more of these implant-type devices, can you speak to that at all? Have you seen her back? Or?
No, she is in California, and unfortunately, I am now in another state due to my personal circumstances. And so I have not been able to physically see her since 2011 when I moved out here from California, where I currently live. But I told her she needs, I always give her advice. And I advised her to go to a doctor so that they could be lanced and opened and let's investigate what could be under these boils. Because when the device came out of her, she called me to her hotel room, she personally popped it out, but she can't get to her back. Where it came out of, she could easily get to, and she popped it out. So she needs to have that medically followed up on, because I can't. I've seen other pictures. I've seen pictures of proof to me that she was poisoned with blue lips. And
let's talk about that. And you had mentioned privately, I think you said cyanide. How did she get
poisoned? Well, Lori had been arrested, and she shouldn't have been. It was her boyfriend and her. The police were called. And Lori should not have been the one that got handcuffed. But once again, due to the fact that she feels she's being tracked and followed, that's probably why those situations on her back could be yet new tracking devices. Because every time she ends up in a jail, they have access where they place her to very strong psychotropic medication that can knock her out. And she even has flashbacks of that happening to her, where they were holding her arm down and injecting her IV push. So she ends up in jail in Modesto. And when she gets out, she once again sent me pictures of her wrists. She sent me a picture of her face. It looked like she'd taken a blue lip liner and lined her lip. And her lips were also dusky. But what was most dramatic was the lining of her lips, you know, the outer lip was dark blue, and her eyes were so swollen that was her body's protection against the poison. It just so much water on her eyes, she could barely open one of the eyes. And that persisted, and the blue lips persisted for months. That's not normal. That should go away within a day if it was something like a food allergy or something that would be a normal explanation. I've seen those pictures and said, you know, you need to be detoxed. And that looks like arsenic to me because of my emergency department experience. I've seen poisoned people come through the ER and treated them. I've actually witnessed it. So it looked like arsenic, although there's lots of poisons out there, it looked like arsenic to me. And she did her research, and all of her symptoms were concurrent with arsenic. So that's not good that they're trying to kill her again. You know, okay. Just so many times.
Lori has a history, and she's been clean now for 30 years. If she were, in your opinion, if she were taking something, a street drug or something over the counter, would they produce those same types of physical effects, the swollen eyes, the blue lips?
Nope. There is nothing on that you can take that would do that to you. No drug, you know, like crystal meth or any of the drugs that kids use. And even if you were snorting things under the kitchen sink that aren't drugs, but kids use them anyway, because God knows why, they would not do that. No, no way.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that too, just in case there were a possibility that, you know, maybe at some point she had, let's say, fallen off the wagon, right? You want to rule out every...
There's no way. Yeah. No, that's not what... No. No, it's impossible. What I saw in the pictures, which she sent me, multiple pictures, and this went on for a month, that she had the blue lip, and that's not possible. I mean, if somebody has blue lips and they're an adult, you put them on oxygen and you stabilize them in the ER, and you certainly don't discharge them until the duskiness is gone, because you're reoxygenated and holding oxygen. But unfortunately, with this like organic arsenic, your lips remain blue for quite some time, and that's exactly what I've seen evidence of through phone pictures. And the swollen eyes took a long time as well.
So in your personal opinion, based on your experience, as a nurse, you would say primarily that Lori has clinical depression, but that she has not gotten any type of multiple personality disorder, and she has not been diagnosed as such. Do I have that correctly?
No, she has been diagnosed with that, but it's not correct. When I saw her, she was displaying no delusional activity. However, when you describe your story in a psychiatric ward of the things that happened to her, any psychiatrist is going to be, I don't really even know how to put it, they're going to be suspect.
Okay, perfect.
Being a member of the PET team, where I interview a client for 45 minutes to an hour, and I have to decide whether to place them on a hold against their will or place them in treatment or give them an outside referral. You know, she has never displayed any kind of delusional behavior. She's merely talking about what actually happened to her, which is frightening, sad, and she's a strong person to have survived all this so far. You're not done with her.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for offering up your her character and to what you witnessed both personally and in photographs.
And on a personal note, I would like to add that I believe Lori to be very brave. She has spoken to me about this due to our friendship, that the reason she's coming forward with this is because she, if she can possibly help another survivor of this, because most of these people, and I've researched it myself, they break off into multiple personality disorder. Therefore, it makes them a witness that can't be believed. And I'm very proud of the fact that she has survived all this and has come out on the other side with a little depression, a little anxiety, and a little bit of PTSD. But who wouldn't after what she's been through? Torture, attempted murder. I mean, that sounds very harsh, but they have tried to kill her. And they definitely have harmed her, and they have tortured her, and it's sad. It's just sad that we have certain people in politics or in power that are willing to go to this length to harm people.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate that.
And thank you. It's been my pleasure to tell and collaborate her truth, because it is the truth. She's not a psych patient. She's a torture victim.
Okay. All right, so there you go. That's Judy Tate.
Yep.
Okay, so here we are with Lori Doyle, who claims to be a satanic ritual abuse victim and also an MK Ultra victim. And I'm going to give her the floor for the remainder of the show to tell her story. Lori, are you there?
I am. Okay. I really want to start off by thanking you. I think it's really brave and wonderful that you care enough to let me tell my story. Thank you, Maggie.
You're most welcome.
Okay. I am a survivor also of Pizzagate, including satanic ritual abuse, MK Ultra Monarch assassin programming, and I am the only known survivor of a murder snuff film. I'm going to read my letter that I wrote President Trump 3 months ago. I'm going to be sending a follow-up letter soon. And I'm doing this for several reasons. I was nearly killed in custody 2 years ago, and I have evidence of being poisoned, every symptom of being poisoned with inorganic arsenic. And I'm doing this because I have not spoke to my 32-year-old son since he was 18, and because I knew I was dealing with the Satanic Pedophile Network, the CIA Satanic Pedophile and Murder Network of Hollywood, I feared that he would be trafficked. So I purposely lost touch with my son and let his football coach adopt him after the principal of his school took him from me. And basically, I've not seen him since. I figured that if my son is around me, he is in more danger of being trafficked. And my son is my life. And the hardest thing I ever did was give him up. And I don't know if he survived this. So I'm going to read this letter. I'm ready to find out the fate of my son. And I'm going on record so that there is something true out there. I am the most significant American MK Ultra survivor that has come forward since Kathy O'Brien. I am the only one with, besides Kathy O'Brien, with injuries and forensic evidence documented. I'm the only one with forensic evidence and injuries consistent with torture. I'm just going to read the letter because it's an outline, and then I'm going to talk about my childhood. This is my letter to President Trump. I also have come forward because when all this is over and I go on record and make it safe to have my son with me, since I survived this from having 30 years of recovery in just about anything that ends in anonymous, including codependence work, I want to come forward, and it is my fondest wish to help President Trump build treatment centers for all the victims of the pedophile network, of being trafficked, MK Ultra, all the victims. I think I've got a good idea of how to heal this. So here goes. I'm an eyewitness and survived the satanic pedophile network of Hollywood and MK Ultra torture. I can prove the existence of murder snuff films and that the CIA and the cabal are still doing MK Ultra torture. I may be the only survivor who did not split into dissociated disorder or MPD. I was nearly killed while in custody for what I know 2 years ago in Stanislaus County, Modesto, California. I have a 31-year-old son who I purposely lost touch with in order to protect him 16 years ago. I've not seen him since. His name, I'm going to leave his information out of this. I do not know if he survived the satanic pedophile network. Even though I resolved my case from 2 years ago as being a misdemeanor, I have a 17-year-old warrant in the Superior Court of Los Angeles in my maiden name. And through all these years, I cannot find any attorney to show up for me, even though my felony warrant is Prop 47 applicable. If I turn myself in, Gil and the mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, will finish their murder snuff film, as this warrant is in their county of Los Angeles that I narrowly escaped over 20 years ago. I reported this and gave my timeline to Detective Mark Maynard at markmaynard@california.gov in 2004. I reported narrowly escaping a murder snuff film of me where I identify ex-District Attorney of Los Angeles, Gil Garcetti, as running and directing my murder snuff film. A little over 20 years ago in Pixel, or no, it was 20 years ago actually, in Pixel, California, which is basically a gas stop outside of Fresno, California, in the California desert. I gave a copy to the defense attorney, Robert Shapiro, and put a copy of my timeline in my psych file with Dr. John Baylog in Hawaii. I sit here today with scarred blue in my lower lip, visible scarring and grooves around my outer wrist from years of handcuff torture in three different jails in California. I'm a well-spoken 55-year-old Christian lady, and I have never had lip injections or any work done. I say this because there are blue lines around my lower lip. I am a retired Salvation Army soldier. I identify Gil Garcetti running my snuff film. I identify him by his height at approximately 5'5" and his voice. His height is not common knowledge or public record. I worked at Avenue Entertainment for Kerry Brokaw, a feature film in the 80s, so I know how to identify a director of a film. I saw men in hooded sweatshirts rolling up kindling firewood up in newspaper, filling up half a semi. There was dry ice all over the terrain to hide that it was in California. I had over 200 gangbangers in the California desert at night creeping up on me. I viewed our truck standing in front of it as the camera. It was a Chevy Blazer. I went up to it, and behind the headlamps, wired, were actual camera lenses that were a round bubble, a little bigger than a grapefruit, glass lenses with a bubble in the middle. So I didn't see a camera because our truck was made to be the camera. Before we broke down, I saw a huge cable very similar to what they use to plug in cameras on a movie set wrapped all around the bottom of our truck. Sorry. I offered to do hypnosis or take a lie detective test when I reported this in 2007 for Mark Maynard, when I reported this to the state of California. I saved hair and nail clippings to prove I was given LSD and MK Ultra torture while in custody in Siskiyou County Jail in Yreka, California, and in Los Angeles County Twin Towers Jail in Los Angeles, California. I still have forensic evidence to substantiate it all. Also, I have blood and hair and toenail clippings. I have fluid from a blood, toenail and hair clippings to prove that I have been drug-free and I've not done coke in 20 years. Also, that I'm stabilized on meds, and my diagnosis is minor bipolar with severe anxiety, depression, and PTSD. That has been my diagnosis for over 20 years. On the same day as one of my court dates, President Trump had fired James Comey in Los Angeles. I look for signs from God. That day, I was going to ask for, in a court a few hours away, in a courtroom, I was going to ask for federal protection if I was taken into custody and there were any manufactured charges to keep me in jail. I have photos and a video of me of having symptoms of being poisoned with inorganic arsenic. I have knee lines in my left thumb and visible red horizontal lines in all my toenails from nearly dying in custody that have been growing out. I have clipped them. Every time I've clipped them, I have bagged them and put the date and what toe and foot they came off of. Until I go on record with what I know, Mr. President, my son will not be safe around me if he survived this. I was arrested 2 years ago for a citable offense. Even though officers had their hands on my meds, venlafaxine, buspirone, Seroquel, and Effexor, which I have been stabilized on and in treatment for over 10 years, 22 years to be exact. They had their hands on my meds that was in Lori Doyle. I was handcuffed so tight I could not get in the police cars. I was screaming. My wrists were re-injured. I begged them to take my meds. They would not. This was observed by 3 people following my arrest online. And my friend Victoria Laurie was on the phone when police arrested me. And I slipped the phone deep in under in my bed, under my comforter, but she could hear. She heard them as I begged them. I was in a pajama top and shorts. I begged them to let me change or get a jacket. They wouldn't. I begged them to take my meds. They had their hands on my meds. They said they had doctors inside that would give me my meds. My arrest was followed. I was arrested under Lori Doyle, which has been my legal name, for 17 years. My arrest name was changed to my maiden name, Lori Lynn Henry. This was observed by 3 people online following my arrest. Jeff Pedrati, my boyfriend and roommate, Victoria Laurie, who was on the phone with me when officers refused to take my medications, and Natalie Rispoli. My name was change to refuse me my meds, which are very dangerous to suddenly remove me from. The symptoms of being suddenly removed from my meds are similar to the symptoms of inorganic arsenic poisoning. I was in and out of consciousness in my cell, taking little sips of water, fearing for my life, begging for help, begging for medication. My heart rate was up so high, I was afraid I would stroke out or have a heart attack. On day three, I got suicidal. I detail my letter in a detailed letter to an attorney I contacted. On day three, I got suicidal for the first time and I was housed alone. They cuffed me. They took me to an area. They stripped me of all my clothes. They dressed me in some Velcro vest thing. And mind you, I'm tall and very busty. I could not cover my breasts. They put me in a hole, only it was lit with an observation camera. I could not cover my bare behind and my breasts to guards walking by looking in or from the observation camera. So I ended up, they told me when I was walking down there, they were not medically staffed and had no doctors to prescribe me meds. I believe they were hoping I would commit suicide and they could finish their snuff film. I did not. I laid on that filthy floor and covered myself with the green thing as the only way I could hide my nakedness from male guards walking by. They only took my blood pressure 3 times in 5 days. I was kept from my meds a total of 5 days. When you take me off of my meds, the symptoms go from bipolar to full-blown paranoid schizophrenia, and that is not my mental illness. That is a symptom of being taken off of venlafaxine, Effexor, Seroquel, and Buspirone. So my symptoms are now psychotic and paranoid. So I'm in this condition. I have to promise not to hurt myself. I'm returned to my cell. Now, when I was transported, the cuffs were so tight, you're supposed to be able to put a finger through them legally, and I couldn't move them. They were so tight on wrists that were already injured, and they had these metal brackets that were 4 inches wide around my forearms, and I have photos that I have sent of my bruised and injured forearms that are still so injured to this day from those illegal brackets with the handcuffs on. In my photos, the skin popped from when the circulation is cut off, your skin will pop. Like when someone's strangled, their eyes will turn red with your skin. I have photos. And of the photos of my injuries, I have a photo of the skin pops of a small tattoo on my left wrist to identify those photos are, in fact, of me. When I went to load the photos, they were removed from my phone, as was the video I have. And I have a video of me having what's referred to as panda eyes. When you research panda eyes, they're found in severely abused children that have been, it's your face showing you nearly dying, your eyes. And so when I got home, my witness, she's subspecialized. She is a certified legal nurse consultant. She witnessed me taking what looked like a tracking device out of my leg many years ago. She actually took it in the bathroom and she wiped my blood off of it. And it was a metal tracking device that was small, like the top of an eraser, but it had these curling clamp marks, probably so that it wouldn't work its way up as things naturally do. And that was in a boil deep in my right knee. I later identified that as a tracking device. This is the first time I've spoke of this, so I'm going to thank the audience for your patience. It's not an easy thing to do.
It's fine. Take your time.
Okay. The attorney Del Gallipo informed me. I contacted many attorneys trying to get an attorney for officer misconduct and torture. And even though I call every attorney when I tell my story of what they did to me, they would gasp. Oh, also, I wanted to point out when I was transferred in this psychotic episode, and I suspect they gave me LSD because I didn't sleep the whole time. In this condition, they locked me in a small cage in the back. And when I went, I was shackled with restraints and chains, connecting the shackles from my feet to my wrists. So when I stepped down the back of the van, when I'm trying to get out in this condition, without my glasses, because I was afraid they'd fall off and I'd step on them. So on top of everything, I'm legally blind. I go to step down on this step, afraid I'm going to fall down with these weird clamps on and handcuffs and stuff and really hurt myself. There was no officer or no one to help me down. It was a miracle. I didn't fall flat on my face in that condition. In court, I was praying with all the girls. We were all praying to soften the hearts of the judges and the people in the courts. I automatically took my role as Salvation Army soldier inside. Okay, I called the attorney that I testified for 20 years ago. I made Gil Garcetti lose a case while he was in office. And that is motive. I testified for the defense attorney in Van Nuys, California court over 20 years ago when I was clean and sober. I was a character witness for the defense attorney, Alex Kessel, in Encino. I was told by Mr. Kessel that the jury foreman told him that it was my specific testimony that made a unanimous not guilty verdict. That means I made him lose a case. That is public record and motive. They suggested I call the defense attorney, Dale Gallipo, for my current case, for what happened to me, who specializes in officer misconduct, shootings, and torture. So I sent my information and loaded photos that I have on a disc so they could examine my injuries, which the grooves in my wrists are so obvious to the naked eye from the years of handcuff abuse, torture. It is crazy. So after sending all my information, the office of Del Gallipo, his brother, informed me on the phone that they only take cases of dead people. No attorney will take this case. When I mentioned this in 2004, they stalled my case for 7 years and then finally told me, oh, you're not credible. We're not taking any of your evidence. My witness gave a deposition to Detective Mark Maynard and kept calling him saying, come on, let's move forward with this. She's a certified legal nurse consultant. She was also head of the Psychiatric Emergency Evaluation Team, which is the PET team, which is the highest position a psych nurse or any nurse can hold in Los Angeles. And she was clinical director. She kept saying, come on, let's do a deposition. He never turned it in. And basically, he apologized to me many years later when the statute of limitations. So I wasn't letting this happen in this case. So
okay, take your time.
I believe my son was in preschool and I was working during the McMartin preschool trial in Los Angeles. He was in a preschool at that time. He was 3 years old. He was in a preschool in Santa Monica, which is not far from Manhattan Beach. And, you know, I was a single parent in recovery, working 10 hours a day, being a single parent and going to meetings. I did not have time to keep up on current events. I had no idea that trial even took place until later, until I heard FBI Ted Gunderson discuss it in the CIA and Satanism, the video he has on YouTube later. My son came home from that preschool with a huge bite twice, like similar to the ones that you see in scary movies when the demon bites them. I mean, we're talking bruise, broken skin. And he used to have nightmares of, he would say, Mom, the baby touched me. Mom, the baby touched me. And he had a stuffed animal named Baby. And I thought he was having nightmares about his stuffed animal, but in hindsight, if my son did survive this, I believe he went to one of those schools that was tunneled. When he came home with that, I told him that I told the family, your child bit my child. That is an AIDS risk for him to break skin with his mouth. He cannot do that. And I heard them say, oh, Eric, don't do that again. I'm like, okay, I'm taking care of this. This child had also grabbed my sweet son's toys and hurt him with it. So I said, okay, that kid bites you real hard, you suck him right in the nose. So I told him, I said, but if you suck him in the nose, you better have a bad bite mark or you're going to be in big trouble. If you have a bad bite mark, you won't be in trouble. So a few days later, I pick him up. Jonathan gave Eric a bloody nose. I said, show me the bite. And the bite was up under his arm, which is an odd place to have a bite, I think. But here it is. I said, you better keep that kid away from my kid. You understand? I was so busy. I mean, I thought I could handle the situation. And in hindsight, it might have saved my son because, you know, he was telling people when he was abused. I think they were, you know, trying to see that who would put up with it. So, yeah, I am gifted. I'll go into that later. Okay. So I pulled out the wrong letter. That's why I'm having to elaborate. That's okay, though. Okay. Ted Gunderson died of inorganic, was being treated. The official reason for Ted Gunderson dying in 2012 said that that is FBI Ted Gunderson, and he was supervisor of Los Angeles in the 70s and 80s for FBI and Los Angeles, and I think I was Texas and Florida too. So he was a big pioneer, and he outlines the whole operation of what the cabal has done, complete with all of it. And I would encourage people to watch Ted Gunderson, the CIA and Satanism on YouTube, to be familiar with this. Ted Gunderson talks about the McMartin preschool and how he had children. He had identified, he got an archaeologist, he identified there were tunnels under the school that had been filled in. And he got the children under hypnosis, and the children did artist renditions of the people who they saw, including household name actors, actresses, politicians, sports figures. One of the main figures that the children identified as satanic, ritually abusing them, as mentioned in this video. Ted Gunderson says, and I quote, the man, he is referring to who runs the CIA Satanic Pedophile Network. He says the children identified the son of the most prominent figure in Los Angeles, a household name, the politician that has run Los Angeles for decades. His son runs the entire network. That man is Gil Garcetti, who has been in office for nearly 30 years, who was in office for nearly 30 years. And his son, who runs the network, is Mayor Eric Garcetti, the current mayor of Los Angeles. There are some interesting facts about him, too. But yeah, he was identified by the kids. And Ted Gunderson also mentions that this has Bill Clinton written all over it. But they asked him to identify, and he said he was afraid of getting sued. None of his testimony was allowed in the McMartin preschool. And there was one very important factor that I need to point out about McMartin and Gil Garcetti. It is public knowledge. It is public knowledge that Mr. Garcetti, with no explanation, he was transferred to Torrance Police Department and demoted, but he had the same pay. So the circumstances are interesting. The quote is, it was necessary to remove Garcetti for very personal reasons. He was put, he was demoted and put and transferred to Torrance Police Department in 1988. Torrance is a neighboring town. It goes Torrance, Redondo Beach, Manhattan Beach. Manhattan Beach is where McMartin Preschool was. Torrance is a big police department where they would investigate it. So Garcetti took his name. He was, I believe he was assistant district attorney and actually succeeded Ira Reiner, who was the DA during the three-year trial of McMartin. Mr. Garcetti was demoted and transferred to Torrance for two reasons. One, to be in charge of ruining the credibility of the hundreds of children that came forward from Torrance PD. And two, so his name is not connected in any way to that case. And I would also like to say, I have been told, I was told by a nurse who specialized in forensics that I have a photographic memory. So everything I remember, it has been confirmed by a specialist that I can go under hypnosis and do the same artist renditions and identify it. I believe my parents sold me. And Garcetti, Gil Garcetti, started working the same year I moved to Wilmington. So it is possible. Now, I know it's a big claim to say my parents sold me. So now I'm going to read an overview of what happened to me as a child, so that like me, you will have no doubts that my parents groomed me as a gifted child for CIA MK Ultra assassination program and sold me to Garcetti's. Okay.
Okay, take your time.
Give me a second. Okay. Now I'm going to read the the horrific child abuse I sustained. And, you know, people can make up their own mind, but I think it's pretty clear. Okay. Oh, by the way, I also need to say that my nurse was Gil Garcetti's wife, Suki Garcetti, in both jails. She was my nurse. Once, when I was being administered cyanide tablets, and she spoke, and having a photographic memory as audio too, and the other time in disguise, but she spoke, so I knew it was the same person, in LA County Twin Towers, while I was in heavy restraints, she came in and jabbed me with one of those huge scary needles that you see in movies, the long ones that are about a foot long with the metal grip. She jabbed my left foot hard with one of those, and I knocked out. And I said to her, "What's that?" She says, "Oh, some Howl doll and some other stuff." So she spoke. So I know it was her. Her maiden name is Roth. I believe that they are Rothschilds. The people that do murder snuff films are the highest up on the chain of the, whatever you want to call it, New World Order, Illuminati, the cabal. She and Gil Garcetti are both head of Roth Enterprises. And I think it's very, that is their Clinton Foundation, where they're funneling the money into.
Okay.
Give me a second.
Sure, that's okay. Take your time.
Okay. Here we go. I also identified Eric's wife, Amy Wakeland, in the operation. So to be clear, I've identified Mayor Eric Garcetti, his father, Gil Garcetti, his mother, Suki Roth Garcetti, and his wife, Amy Wakeland, in the operation. What happened was I got photographic evidence that they were filming in the firewalls of all the hotels in Southern California, including Holiday Inns. I snapped a photo while my my ex-husband and I were celebrating my birthday at a Marriott, and we were partying, and I want to say that I discovered this operation in my last relapse, which was 20 years ago, and I have long hair that I've grown out twice to prove that I have been off coke for a very long time, and I will submit to any test saying that is true. It is such a miracle that I did not fracture. Now I'm going to read about my childhood and why I believe I was sold. My pedophile stepfather, who was in the Navy, and I say that because the Navy and the Army are the most complicit in the CIA dark ops. I was alone with my pedophile stepfather Monday through Friday after school for 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. And at night, 2 days a week, while my mom went to art school, which, of course, he encouraged. He started with performing kissing oral sex on me when I was 8 years old. I remember thinking he must really love me a lot to kiss me there. It was the only fathering I knew, as my father divorced my mom when I was 5. He moved on pretty quickly to mutual oral sex that we had regularly from age 8 to age 11. Jim encouraged me that it was better to be bisexual because that way I will always have someone no matter where I am. He told me to encourage sexual encounters with my friends and come back and tell him about it. He also showed me different forms of pornography in magazines and home movies. Some were bisexual, some were interracial intercourse, which I have to say I remember being very shocked seeing that. He had a small projector in his bedroom. Mm-hmm. He raped me anally at age 9. Now, I say rape because even though he talked me into anal sex, even though I was talked into it and gave it my permission, at age 8, you cannot give consent. I want to pause here and tell victims that if you gave consent for any of your members to have sex with you, that is not consent. That is statutory rape. And just because it wasn't violent and brutal does not make it any less of a rape. I did not do well in school. I grew up in Wilmington, California. It's a ghetto in California. I was the only blue-eyed freckle-faced girl in my school. I started running away because of all the beatings. They were all so sexual, with my mother watching. He would yell at me to grab my ankles, but I couldn't, with me bent over, butt-ass naked, while he repeatedly whipped me with the extension cord to the percolator or green switch or a paddle, which was a thick piece of metal with a thick piece of wood, probably 3/4 inch thick with holes drilled into it. Once he hit me so hard, he split the paddle on me and laughed. He and my mother laughed. She watched every beating.
She was there. She was there.
She watched every beating.
Okay.
I know you did not know about this, Maggie.
No, you hadn't told me that.
I know. Okay. I got into specifics, so there is no question my mother was involved and she sold me. Okay. He would scream at me to grab my ankles. Well, what's revealed when a little girl is butt-ass naked trying to grab her ankles? What is he hitting? My private.
So we're going to stop right there and call it a day. This is the conclusion of the first in a 2-part series. regarding Lori and Judy's claims that Lori has been severely abused both by her family and outsiders. I would again like to stress that the views that are contained within the show are not necessarily the views of myself or the network, LNM Radio Network, or any of its affiliates. This is someone who wants to share her experiences with the public in hopes that she can change things. I'd like to thank Pat Carr for allowing us to play his music on my shows. You can listen here to next week, Sunday at 7 p.m. EST for the conclusion, where Lori will talk about not only the continued abuse from her family, but how she claims to have been groomed, and then also more details on the filming of the movie that she claims to have been an attempted snuff film. So thanks everybody for joining us. God bless you and God bless all. Have a good night. Bye-bye.